argument for the city.
May it please the court. As the court knows, this is a DTPA case brought by the respondent Custom Controls against my client, Quantel, and one of its distributors. Prior to trial, the distributor was non-suited. There was no evidence at trial that my client committed any act that was a violation of the DTPA. There was no evidence at trial that my client committed any act that it could be held vicariously responsible for any act that was committed by its distributor. The district court properly granted my motion for judgment at the conclusion of the respondent's case in chief and entered a take-nothing judgment. The Court of Appeals reversed, holding that, as I understand the opinion, that there was evidence of a relationship between my client and his distributor. And apparently that is legally sufficient evidence upon which the district court could have imposed liability on my client. It reversed the trial court's judgment and remanded the case for a new trial. I believe that the Court of Appeals erred and that this court ought to reverse that judgment and affirm the judgment of the trial court. I would like to recall certain of the facts of this case because I believe they're important in understanding the case. The distributor's name was Computer Results, a company located in Houston, and there was a written distributorship agreement between my client, Quantel, and Computer Results. That was admitted at trial as plaintiff's exhibit number 15. And under this distributorship agreement, the distributor, Computer Results, was allowed to sell original hardware and original software of Quantel. Quantel was a computer manufacturer and also had some software. And Computer Results was authorized to sell and resell original hardware and original software. And that point can't be emphasized enough, and I will emphasize it from time to time as I go through the argument. What is hardware? Hardware is the physical stuff, the electronics that actually sits there and operates when you plug the software, for example, on a floppy disk into the computer, and the floppy disk has the instructions on it that causes the hardware to do what the whatever the instructions are. Now, in 1979 and 80, Computer Results entered into three contracts with the respondent to provide original Quantel hardware, original Quantel software, and some modified or customized software that Computer Results was going to write, was going to prepare. And Custom Controls admitted at trial that it knew that Computer Results was going to make this hardware, this customized or modified software, not Quantel. They admitted that at trial. They knew that it was coming from Computer Results. Computer Results was expressly prohibited by the distributorship agreement from modifying any hardware or any software of Quantel without the prior written permission of Quantel. There is no evidence that such permission was ever obtained. There's no evidence that it was ever sought. And there's no evidence that Quantel knew that this modified or customized software was going to be made for Custom Controls Company by Computer Results. With respect to the original Quantel software that that Custom Controls got, no problems. With respect to the original hardware of Quantel that Custom Controls got, no problems except for with the tape drive, a piece of equipment that's used on this computer stuff, which were ironed out, and there were some problems with the printer, But there's no evidence that any problems with the printer was a producing cause of damages to the respondent. Where was the real problem? The real problem was with the modified and customized software that Custom Controls got from Computer Results. Mr. Johnson, the accountant for Custom Controls, testified it was all software problems, most all software problems, at page 87 of the Statement of Facts. Quantel, there is no evidence that Quantel had any involvement whatsoever in with respect to this modified or customized software. As I mentioned earlier, there's no evidence that Quantel committed any act which was a violation of the DTPA. And under this court's holdings in the Home Savings case and in the Kish case, which are cited in my brief, such evidence is required. I suppose the issue in Home Savings didn't address vicarious liability, so that's also an option that may my client might be held vicariously liable were there evidence to support that. But there's no evidence to support vicarious liability, none at all. They pleaded in the district court that Computer Results was a servant of Quantel. There's no evidence of that. They pleaded in the district court that Computer Results was an agent of Quantel. No evidence to support either actual or apparent agency in the district court. None. With respect to actual agency, the distributorship agreement expressly negates an agency relationship, and there's no evidence that distributorship agreement was ever modified. With respect to the apparent agency, there's a duty of inquiry set out in my brief. Custom Controls didn't make the proper inquiry of Quantel. They didn't even inquire as to whether Computer Results was a distributor of Quantel. I conceded in the Court of Appeals that there was a relationship between Quantel and Computer Results. Computer Results was Quantel's distributor. There's no doubt about that. There's no case, to my knowledge, in Texas that has ever held that the mere existence of a relationship between two DTPA defendants is legally sufficient evidence to impose liability on both for violations of the act by only one. Now, there is a suggestion in Potery, cited in my case, in my brief, that the relationship is enough. That statement I submit is just mere dicta, and if it ever amounted to anything more than mere dicta, it was overruled by this court, albeit sub silentio, in Home Savings and in Kish. In the district court, Custom Controls urged that Quantel and Computer Results were inextricably intertwined, citing this court's opinion in Knight against International Harvester. Well, there was no pleading to support this theory, but even if there was, as outlined in my brief, that's at page 22, the facts of this case are just substantially different from the facts of Knight. And the Colonial Leasing case out of Eastland indicates that even if two parties are inextricably intertwined, that just establishes standing for the plaintiff to sue both parties. Still, that court held, reading Home Savings to require proof that both parties committed an act which was a violation of the DTPA. There was just no legally sufficient evidence in the district court to impose liability on my client under the DTPA. The Court of Appeals, with all due respect, erred in holding, in reversing the case and remanding it for a new trial on the mere ground that there was a relationship between Quantel and computer results. My second point of error in this case is...
Before you go to the second point of error, since we're looking at this under a no evidence standpoint, if there is some evidence here, or more than a scintilla of evidence, of some control by Quantel over computer results, does that get them a new trial?
I don't think some control alone does, Your Honor.
Well, that's my problem. I'm trying to articulate what kind of evidence we are looking for to take this out of the no evidence category.
Well, clearly the distributorship agreement provides some control.
Okay.
Thou can do this and thou shall not do this. I think that the evidence that needed to be there to take it out of the no evidence realm was evidence that somehow computer results, they all start with C and they get kind of confusing, that Quantel knew that computer results was modifying its software. They ratified that act somehow, but there's no evidence to that effect here. Evidence perhaps that they encouraged their distributors to modify such software. There's no evidence of that here.
There is kind of negligent trustworthy theory.
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Hiring a distributor who has a bad reputation. I was trying to get it all the possible length.
I don't believe there's any evidence of bad reputation. I may be wrong. On the part of computers.
Has anything been developed in a distributorship or franchise cases around the nation on that kind of theory, the negligent entrustment theory that we usually think of in automobiles?
I cannot answer your question, Your Honor. I'd have to check on that.
Don't worry about it.
There's just no evidence that Quantel was involved at all. None.
Speaking of Quantel, it's so unusual you see a name commencing with Q that the Q is not followed by a U.
Yes, sir.
Is this a contraction for something? Or?
I have no idea, Your Honor, to be quite candid. It started out being Quantel Inc. and then changed to MDS Quantel and then Quantel Business Systems.
Entirely irrelevant to the case, and I'm just curious.
In my second point of error, I take the position, I believe it's sound, that the district judge, this was a non-jury case. The case was tried to George Kelton sitting in Houston, Texas. Non-jury case. The district judge in a non-jury case has two hats. He's the magistrate of the law and he's the finder of the fact. And when the plaintiff rested his case, my position is that the court could properly put on its fact-finding hat and rule against the plaintiff if he was unpersuaded on the merits of the plaintiff's case. The facts with respect to the procedure that happened at trial, the events that happened at trial, are outlined in the brief. Briefly, I'll talk about them. The plaintiff put on four witnesses, two live, two by deposition, and then rested. They asked the district court to withdraw the rest so that they could put on a fifth witness. He was live. That was done. So they put on five witnesses. I moved for judgment at the conclusion of the plaintiff's case. There was never any request of the district judge to reopen the evidence so that the plaintiff could call additional witnesses. It is abundantly clear from the facts, from the events of this case, that the plaintiff's case was as fully developed as it was ever going to be. and it ain't going to be any more fully developed on remand, I would suggest, than it was when it was initially tried. Moreover, the case was filed in 1982, and there was no rush for discovery. He had the opportunity to take all the discovery he wanted to. As I point out in my brief, Texas follows what is the minority rule, and that is, in a non-jury case, the propriety of granting a judgment in favor of the defendant after the plaintiff rests is judged by the same standard to determine if a directed verdict was properly granted in a jury trial. This rule has been with us since at least as early as the Loreno against Crawford case cited in the brief, and for convenience I refer to this rule as the Loreno rule. Doesn't make any sense. I believe the rule ought to be discarded. 35 jurisdictions, we counted. Went through the books at UT Law School yesterday. 35 jurisdictions, plus the District of Columbia, plus the federal rules, plus the federal courts, follow a rule which is different from the Texas rule and which is in accord with Federal Rule 41B.
Do you intend to file a supplemental brief?
I could do that, Your Honor. We have the list right here, and I could state them. If I could file a supplemental brief very easily, have that to you by 2 days from now.
Suggest you do that.
But knowing the Texas rule, why move for a directed verdict at the conclusion of plaintiff's evidence when, if we find more than a scintilla, we've got to reverse? Whereas if you just waited, let the judge rule after everything's in, then the standard's entirely different.
Well, I submit to Your Honor that the standard should not be entirely different.
Well, now that's a different question, but you know what the standard is right now in Texas.
Yes, Your Honor, I do, and I admit that I'm asking for a change in the law, and I believe that if my request is well founded.
Is that necessary to the result of point of error two, or is that alternative if we find there?
Well, I would suggest that the court should sustain both points of error, and if it rules in my favor, they should be alternative holdings of this court.
Yeah, but if we agree with you, there's no evidence,
then we never
have to reach that second point, would we?
That is a possibility that you could reach the second point. What you said, Your Honor, is
if we agreed with what you said up until you got into this second point of error, that is that there was no evidence of any culpable conduct on the part of Quantel, and there's no inextricably intertwining, it's a valid doctrine, then we would not have to reach this point.
That is correct, Your Honor.
I just want to make sure that...
That is correct, Your Honor. You would not have to reach that point.
Okay, so we're wearing this hat either because we find there is some evidence or because alternatively we want to just go and change the law.
Yes, I think that is a correct statement, Your Honor.
I'd like to hear your argument, though, on why the law ought to be changed.
Well, I wasn't trying to cut it off. I was just trying to get it in context.
I didn't even imply your word.
Why should the law be changed, Your Honor? Judicial economy. That's the reason. That's the main reason. Why force the district judge, this is non-jury only now, we're not messing with jury trials at all here. Why force the district judge who has heard the plaintiff's case and who is unpersuaded on the merits of the plaintiff's case when the plaintiff rests to have to hear the defendant's side of the story? What? Why? The court ought to be able to rule right then against the plaintiff if the plaintiff has not carried his burden of proof, his burden of persuasion. By a preponderance, have you persuaded me that you have a case? If so, deny the motion for judgment. If he has not persuaded him, grant it. Our courts are crowded. The cost of litigation skyrockets both to the state and to the litigants. And I just don't see any valid reason for perpetuating this rule. The rule has been in the federal system for at least 42 years. and almost 50 years under interpretations by some circuits. It's worked well and will continue to work well.
Well, isn't there another trap there? One of the means whereby you preserve a no evidence rule is make a motion for instructive verdict. So you make your motion for instructive verdict and it ends up being a trap because the court grants it, very rightly so, only to have it reversed later on and go back and try it again if someone finds a scintilla of evidence.
Yeah, I believe that in the district court, I moved for judgment and didn't move for an instructive verdict, Your Honor. Didn't ask for any instructive verdict because it was a non-jury trial. And if there's no evidence, insufficient evidence, even if there's a prima facie case, the court ought to be able to rule against the plaintiff at that stage. Sure, there are going to be cases where the courts are wrong. And if the court's ruling is so against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence, so as to be manifestly wrong, it can be corrected on appeal. But how often is that going to happen? Probably very little. Also, the district court had the opportunity to observe the demeanor of the witnesses, the credibility of the witnesses, at least the live ones, and or their lack thereof. And he obviously, in my view, was unpersuaded on the merits of the plaintiff's case. It would be a very positive step for this court to adopt Rule 41B, or the essence of Rule 41B, in Texas. It's not a new concept that I'm espousing here. It's a concept that's been recognized in Texas in the cases cited in my brief. Courts have questioned the propriety of the Loreno Rule. In the RWM case, there was a very stinging dissent written about the propriety of the Loreno Rule. So I'm not espousing a novel theory. I think it's time. I think it'd be a very positive step toward decreasing the cost of litigation, both to the litigants and to the state.
Who is the author of the Austin Court's opinion in Charter International versus Tolson Oil? Do you remember?
Justice Brady, Your Honor.
Any other questions?
Thank you for your attention.
We're now ready to hear arguments from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. William Tillman will present arguments from respondents.
May it please the court, I represent the plaintiff in the trial court. Plaintiff was Custom Controls Incorporated. As the defendant there said here, this is a Deceptive Trade Practices Act case. I feel that to properly bring my case in perspective, I must tell you a small amount about the facts of which I say we produced much more than a scintilla of evidence, as was described by the Court of Civil Appeals when they reversed and remanded this case. The plaintiff, Custom Controls, operates a company in Texas, in Houston, and decided that they needed a business system. The business system, as I understand it, includes hardware, software, and all of the other items such as a floppy disk. They wanted, and made it known, they wanted a full service business system. One of the principals had known about Quantel, known that Quantel was a national company, and that was one of their parameters. They wanted a national company. In seeking out Quantel, they looked them up in the business pages of the Yellow Pages, business directory of the Yellow Pages in Houston. Found the name Quantel, phoned them, computer results answered. After some discussion, sales call was made. Salesman brings not computer results literature, brings Quantel literature. Quantel's literature is touting the various things that these many business systems that Quantel furnished, what they would provide. After a numerous conversations, correspondence on letterhead that was plainly embossed, Quantel, a proposal was made by Computer Results on behalf of Quantel, and in that proposal that you have in my exhibits, plainly the opening letter begins, Quantel, a Quantel write-up, Quantel System 965. They never mentioned at that time hardware or software and never distinguished it, as has been done here. The system, as I said, includes both. The Quantel company had Computer Results as a distributor. You have the distributor agreement, which is exhibit 15. And in that exhibit, plainly limits and plainly requires certain items that Computer Results has to do to carry on their activity. They got to distribute advertising. This advertising, I subscribe to this court, was false and misleading. The equipment, the system that they sold could not, would not, and has not done what they touted it to do.
Counselor, you made the same argument in the district court, and you chose to try the case before the without a jury, and you presented these four witnesses that would back up what you just stated to this court, and the court ruled against it.
Yes, Your Honor. And the Court of Civil Appeals reversed and remanded after it read the statement of facts and the proof that I had listed before Judge Kelton, who was a district judge from Odessa, trying a case in Houston.
Well, didn't all the Court of Appeals say, though, that you'd shown more than a scintilla of evidence?
Yes, Judge Kilgarland, and in addition to that, it added a listing of the items that I had proved. I had found them in the telephone directory, that they had distributed advertising, and that Computer Results was a distributor, and that was part of their duties, and that all of the advertisement that was introduced, some 8 or 10 are listed as exhibits in this case, and in each case, Your Honor, there was misleading and deceptive acts touted. The system would not and will not do what they said it would do. The counsel for the defendant there said that the systems worked. That is not my understanding of what the statement of facts says. The system did not work. There was 5 or 6 systems, a general ledger. The facts were, and the testimony was, that it never worked and does not work today. There was accounts receivable ledger. It would not work. In other words, the system, as far as what my client wanted, would not work. Quantel had advertised in that area that they and then touted this system, that it would do the various items that my client wanted. It would not. It will not.
We're talking about the software or the hardware?
We're talking about the software, which is a system, part of the system.
We're talking about the software that was modified or custom-made by Quantel? Custom Control Company.
All, Your Honor, of the system, which includes the hardware and the software, was manufactured by Quantel. in certain small instances, it was modified. But not only did the non-modified stuff not work, but the modified stuff didn't work. None of the system worked. It would not do what it was touted to do in the advertisement that had been disseminated to my client and others. It will not today. As I understand the Deceptive Trade Practices Law, and as this court has held in the Knight case, Justice Pope, I believe, was the person who wrote that, justice who wrote that opinion. When two or more parties are inextricably entwined, such as Quantel and Computer Results were, each party must be held responsible for their acts, which would be misrepresentation or deceptive, and cause a third party, such as my client, Custom Controls, to be damaged.
Is that doctrine of inextricable intertwination necessary for you to raise the fact issue, or do you think there's enough standing alone just on Quantel's?
I think there's enough standing alone without that, Your Honor. I think
that's just an added argument.
Yes, they added, they advertise in the telephone directory. Quantel, you call them, you get Custom Controls. You get C's are gotten me again, Your Honor. You get Computer Results. They were required by the distributorship agreement very clearly to promote Quantel equipment, to sell only Quantel equipment, and to get written approval to modify. A big item in the distributorship agreement is the sharing of the profits. And that is the item that both Portier, if I pronounce it correctly, a case of the 14th Court of Appeals in Houston, and the Knight case out of this court, both say that when they share the profits, they got to share the liability, the detriment. And in this case, they did so. I think this court can review the Court of Civil Appeals, the Court of Appeals opinion, and my brief, and they will find that sufficient evidence was presented that the court can rule on the defendant's point of error, number one, and rule that the Court of Civil Appeals, the Court of Appeals, First District, properly reversed and remanded this case for a new trial, and will allow the case to be retried. As to point of error number two, the no evidence point, I mean the point concerning the standard that a trial court must take in a non-jury trial such as this. This was a non-jury trial. Once the court had received the various elements of evidence that was presented on behalf of my client and that have been described in my outline, in my brief, the court then had no authority, in my opinion, and in the opinion of the Court of Appeals in Houston, to render a judgment on behalf of the defendant without the defendant going forth and rebutting the evidence that had been produced.
I think we all agree that's the existing law. If we decided there's some of it that would have supported a verdict for your client under the existing law, then the trial judge would have to have listened to all the evidence the defendant could put on. But the petitioner's not contending otherwise. The petitioner contends the law should be changed. So at least what I want to hear is policy reasons why the Texas position, which petitioner claims is a minority position, is a good one, why it's sound, why in the long run it saves judicial time and saves money for litigants.
Well, I'm not so sure that there's judicial economy if you review the courts of appeals cases that I've reviewed in the last few weeks. There are a great number of them that have been reversed and remanded on this very point. And as far as the defendant in this case, Quantel, that was the rules that were in place the day we tried the case.
But it didn't affect the way you tried your case.
Didn't affect the way I tried my case because I presented sufficient evidence, in my opinion, to get a verdict.
You weren't saving back a bunch of things for rebuttals.
No, you
could zing them on after.
I feel like today that I presented sufficient evidence for a verdict.
What evidence? Then you're conceding that you gave it your best shot. You presented all the evidence on to convince the trial court that you were entitled to for judgment. And you did not ask to reopen, you did not ask to put on additional evidence. I mean, you gave it your best shot.
Yes, Your Honor. I think if a review is made of the evidence that I presented showing the concert action, the requirements that Quantel put on computer results, computer whatever, I put on sufficient evidence to get a verdict in the Deceptive Trade Practices Act case, in my opinion. They acted together. Quantel acted in sponsorship of something that they could not present and did not present to my client's detriment in the amount of money that was paid for that system, hardware and software.
And you would want this court to write that in a distributor situation, because of that relationship, you can have vicarious liability of the maker of the product for anything done by the distributor?
No, Your Honor, I don't think for anything done by the distributor, but I think for anything that was required in the distributorship agreement that they were to do to circulate advertisement. This advertisement proved to be false and misleading. It will not do what that advertisement said.
Did you conduct any discovery in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. I took depositions of Mr. Stacy, who was the president of Computer Results. He admitted the system wouldn't do what it was supposed to do. He pulled off of it without attempting to, he attempted, but at a time before it was nearly completed, he pulled off a lot of the complaints. Most of the complaints were on systems that were canned systems prepared by Quantel. Those systems, by the way, are all embossed, even the modified or otherwise, are embossed with Quantel. Have nothing to do with Computer Results.
Suppose anybody from Quantel?
No, Your Honor. I deposed a computer expert, if there is such a thing, and this computer expert had spent many, many days attempting to remedy the problems on both the modified and unmodified systems that had been purchased from Quantel and Computer Results by my client.
Did you sue Computer Results or just Quantel?
I sued Mohawk Data, who was merged in and the name changed to Quantel, and then I sued, and at the same time I sued Computer Results, and Computer Results is no longer a viable company, and was not a viable company, had taken bankruptcy at the time of the trial.
So
I dismissed them at the time. Well, they were in at the trial court, but after that I didn't pursue them on appeal.
You got a default judgment against them?
No, Your Honor.
Didn't even get them served?
Yes. Got them served. They were in the case.
They answered.
They answered. The same law firm answered for both, but they took bankruptcy. Computer Results took bankruptcy.
Is there a non-suit after that?
At the end of my trial in trial court, yes.
You say your study of cases has indicated that it would not result in judicial economy. Let's just take this case for example. Let us suppose that the rule were, as Quantel advocates here, it ought to be, so that when you appeal the trial court's decision, to the First Court of Appeals, rather than appealing on the basis that there was more than a scintilla of evidence and therefore the trial judge erred in instructing or directing a verdict against you, let's say you'd had to appeal saying the decision of the trial court was against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence, which you would have had to have done had the rule as Quantel advocates been in effect. Isn't it true that under that situation we'd have no jurisdiction? So to that point at least, there would have been judicial economy.
Your Honor, there are a number of judicial economies I didn't finish. As far as the federal rule is concerned, my criticism of that, 41B, would be the federal autonomy. I feel that that is one of the reasons that the state of Texas has maintained the rule we have now in jury cases when a directed verdict is requested at the end close of the plaintiff's case, and in non-jury cases when a motion for a judgment is requested at the end of the presentation of the plaintiff's case. Now, both the attorneys in this state are aware of the rule that if there is a scintilla of evidence, that's been a long-standing rule for at least 50 years in this state, then the court can rule only on that evidence. And if there's some evidence more than the scintilla, it must allow the case to continue, and if it's in the Court of Appeals, it must be reversed and remanded. And other than approximately two or three, one being the Charter International case versus Tolson here, and the other one being a case or two out of, one out of Beaumont and one out of Corpus Christi, I feel that the courts of civil appeal are unanimous in that regard.
You're stating what we already know. What I'd like for you to tell me is why. What makes it a good rule? Why do we cling to the rule? What's good about it?
Your Honor, I choose to believe that in our Constitution we have separation of powers. And whereas we're faced with a situation where the justice, in this case the trial court, has to sit in certain instances with two hats. Before he can put on that second hat, he must reach a decision that in this case, at this point, there is no evidence. It's a simple decision. Once I presented the various elements of evidence in a deceptive trade practice case, the fact their system didn't work, the fact they put out false and deceptive advertisement, the fact that it still won't work, the fact they shared the money. Once I did that, then I think the court had to refuse their motion and continue with the trial. That would have been judicial comedy.
Why did you not waive that right when you gave them the power to put on the other hat immediately and rule that the evidence was insufficient?
Well, Your Honor, as I understand the law,
that choice.
I understand, and I won't belabor the point of what the law is in Texas anymore. The fact is that once he put on that other hat, as I understand the law, he cannot make a finding. As the law is in the majority of Texas, not in the majority of the United States. I understand we're in a minority throughout the United States.
Let's suppose that you're in a jury trial and you're representing the defendant. And after the plaintiff has presented all of his or her evidence, the jury stands up as one body and says, we've heard enough, we're going to rule for the defense. Would you put on any evidence at that point?
If I were the defendant?
Yes.
No, Your Honor, because I would move for a mistrial, I think.
What?
If the jury stood up in the box, I believe I would.
If you were the defendant?
If I'm the plaintiff, I'm going to move for mistrial. I beg your pardon.
As defendant,
I would move for an instructive verdict.
You would? You wouldn't mind going to deliberate?
Well.
Because instructive verdict is going to be reversed.
Tactics would make it... that I should not play anything. You just fold my hands and
you should
and
fold
sit
your
back.
Hands and let them go deliberate.
Fold my hands and
the trial
and let them
judge
deliberate.
Is sitting as the jury, and if the trial judge knows at the close of the plaintiff's case that the defendant's going to win in his view,
why should he, I mean, why build a record? Why not? I mean, it should go up at that point. And
that,
if he's wrong, if it's against the great weight, he'll come back for the trial. But that's going to happen so seldomly. Why wouldn't that, in the long run, say everybody must?
That's my point, Your Honor. Once we've reached that point, and if I had not produced the evidence that I produced, and then the defendant could put on whatever rebuttal they had and rest and then move for a verdict, and I believe the results would have been the same. All the parties are in court and all the clients are in court. It would have saved quite a bit of money above what it has now. Because the law length was, if I had a scintilla of evidence, it must be remanded.
Yeah, my experience is probably more judicial economy occurs if trial judges never grant instructed verdicts, because they just guarantee you to go up on appeal and 9 times out of 10 produce a reversal. I don't guess Judge Kelton attended New Judges School and heard Chief Justice Guittard lecture never, never, never.
He was probably setting this appeal up.
Grant an instructed verdict, but that's not your problem, that's not Quantel's problem. It is, however, our problem.
Your Honor, I appreciate your comments, and I feel that the court can reach a decision and allow the court of appeals, reversal, and remand to stand without changing the law as it now stands. I think I had sufficient evidence to overcome the no evidence.
Well, we can't decide whether you had sufficient evidence.
I understand.
If we change the law,
nature.
If we were to change the law, the most we could do would be to reverse this to the Court of Appeals. Let them make a determination under a new standard.
Then you'd have to be saying that the decision, if we change the law, then you'd have to be arguing that the decision of the trial court was against the great weight preponderance.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm satisfied with the law as it stands.
May it please the court, since the lunch hour approaches, I'll attempt to be brief. Mr. Justice Kilgarland was exactly correct with his comments that if we discard the Loreno rule, if a rule like 41B is adopted, the review in the Court of Appeals in a case like this would be, was the evidence against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence, was the judgment for the defendant in this case against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence. With respect to the legal insufficiency point, there has been a lot said by Mr. Tillman that there was more than a scintilla of evidence. Well, there was some evidence, and there was more than a scintilla of evidence, but of what? Of what? All the evidence shows that's detailed by the Court of Appeals in its decision, in Mr. Tillman's brief in this case, is evidence of a relationship. That's it. Nothing else. And I submit to you that there has to be more than just evidence of a relationship to impose liability on a manufacturer for misrepresentations by a distributor.
You don't think this list on page 5 of the Court of Appeals opinion could be seen as showing that computer results was an agent closed with apparent authority by Quantel? And those words don't seem to be in the opinion, but it sure seems to kind of leap out of all those conclusions.
No, sir. No, Your Honor, with all due respect to the Court of Appeals, I do not. And if you look, I don't have the list in front of me right now, but as I recall the list, most of the items there were to the effect, computer results said. Computer results said. And the statements of the purported...
A lot of it was on your stationery that you gave to them.
There were some letters that had Quantel up at the top. I think it was Computer Results Stationery. And they put the Quantel logo on there, although there's no evidence of that. And statements by the purported agent have no bearing on whether or not there's an apparent authority. And I don't have the list in front of me, so... With respect to the advertising, that was of unmodified software. Remember, Custom Controls got, the problem was with the modified software that they got from computer results.
Well, Mr. Tillman said differently. He said that the whole thing is defective. And you, what you read, as I recall, was all common, most all of the problems. The word most all was...
There were some hardware problems that were ironed out, and there were also some problems with the printer. There's no evidence that problems with the printer were a producing cause of damages. No evidence in this record of that. There was only one item, one software package that was unmodified. Only one. It was the report inquiry generator. It's discussed in my brief. I asked his witness, and his witness admitted at pages 74 and 75 of the statement of facts that that was unmodified software and they had no problems with it. That was the only software package on the entire list that they didn't have any problems with. That's the one that came from Quantel. Quantel, there's no evidence that they participated in the modification or customization of this software. None at all.
Now, the Court of Appeals list, you say you don't exactly remember what they said in their list. On page 5 of the opinion, Quantel appointed computer results as its sole distributor in Texas. A distributorship agreement requires computer results to promote Quantel computer systems, to maintain the salesmen, to sell Quantel computer systems, and to maintain these systems after they were sold. You said that doesn't make any, that still doesn't affect you. And there's no liability because of that.
I don't think there's any liability because of that. I believe the evidence more correctly is that computer results was an exclusive distributor in the Houston area for certain counties that's referred to in the distributorship, that are referred to in the distributorship agreement. Yes, they were required to go out, and as any distributor is, to go out and promote the sale of the manufacturer's products. And with respect to the original equipment, there were no problems.
All right, what you're saying is that number one listed on page 5 of the Court of Appeals opinion is correct, but that still does not there's still no liability because of that item. Is that right? That list.
I think it may be correct that the only reason for my hesitation is the last line, and to maintain these systems after they were sold. As I stand here right now, I can't say with absolute certainty that that is or is not in the distributorship agreement. Right. If it is, then it would be correct.
If it is correct, does that impose liability on you when you say it does not?
No, sir. I don't believe it does.
The fact that Quantrell was listed in the Houston Business Telephone Directory on the name for computer results.
There wasn't
imposing liability.
No, sir. I don't believe it does.
You say the computer results told the appellant that Quantrell warned that all their computer systems, they would seek approval of these sales to the appellant from Quantrell.
I don't believe that imposes liability, Your Honor, because that's acts of the purported agent. The agent goes out, or the purported agent goes out and says, Quantel will do this, that, and the other. Is that binding on Quantel? It shouldn't be. I don't believe that's the law in Texas.
Well, if you close them with apparent authority by putting Quantel signs all over them. We'll just have to get into the record.
Number 4, Quantel required computer results to distribute advertising material on behalf of Quantel, displaying Quantel's logo.
That is not enough to impose liability, that what was being distributed was original literature respecting original software packages. That's what's in the record, at least.
Quantel's logo appeared on computer results letterhead and work papers.
That, it appeared on, as I recall, one proposal, on one of the proposals that was made. I don't think that is enough to impose liability.
Well, you're saying not enough to impose liability. All we're looking for is something more than a scintilla of evidence.
See, that's the problem we have.
Is the fact that Quantel's logo appeared on computer's letterhead, is that more than a scintilla of evidence to support liability of Quantel?
Well, basically, did you give computer results the authority to modify the software packages? Is there any evidence?
No, sir. There is no evidence of that.
But they communicated the problems with you, Unit 6. Is
interrupted Judge Robertson from asking. You admit that computer results and appellant communicated the problem.
There was some communications, there are letters that certainly dated in 1982 that were part of the record of the trial court, where they, those were notice letters. They communicated the problems with the system. And, yes, they did.
And what was your response to that?
I don't think there was. I don't think there was a response to that. There's none, in, no evidence in the record of what the response was.
Well, it feels an excellent bit of evidence with some evidence, parentheses, more than a scintilla, of a relationship between Frontel and the computer.
I agree that it was some evidence, more than a scintilla, of a relationship.
But what you're saying is a matter of law, a relationship such as this does not impose liability. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct. That is my position, Your Honor.
Was as there an alter ego claim?
No, sir. No, Your Honor.
Was there an agency claim?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes. That's in the transcript, I believe it went up. It came up. Mr. Tillman indicated that there's some agreement that we would share profits. If there is, I've missed it. I've read that distributorship agreement from cover to cover, and I'm human. I may have missed it, but I find no evidence of that in the distributorship agreement.
Well, how are they to get paid? Did they have a markup on all your products?
I think it was a discount structure in the distributorship agreement. The discount structure would be the price at which Quantel sold to Computer Results. Computer Results then resold this equipment. And in summary, I believe that the judgment of the Court of Appeals ought to be reversed, and the judgment of the trial court affirmed, or at least as Justice Phil Garland indicated, remanded to the Court of Appeals in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.